Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Katie Weaver, Mario Ritter, and Dan Friedel. Later, Dorothy Gundy will have a special report on United States elections, and Jill Robbins and John Russell will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
Thailand is mourning King Bhumibol Adulyadet. King Bhumibol died Thursday in Bangkok. He was 88 years old. In recent years, the king suffered from a series of age-related health problems that mostly kept him in a Bangkok hospital. Last weekend, Thai officials announced that his health had worsened and his condition was not stable. Officials said on Thursday his health never improved and that he died peacefully. A large crowd had gathered outside the hospital where the king was being treated. Many in the crowd broke down with emotion after hearing of his death. Some held photographs of the king and wore yellow or pink clothing in his honor. King Bhumibol came to power 70 years ago. He was the world's longest-serving monarch. He was born in 1927 in the American community of Cambridge, Massachusetts, where his father was studying medicine. The future king was educated mostly in Europe, attending secondary school and a university in Switzerland. He studied music and was a skilled saxophone player and composer of jazz. He also liked sailing and wrote several books, including a bestseller about his favorite dog. He became Thailand's king in 1946 after the mysterious shooting death of his older brother. King Bhumibol was greatly respected and beloved in Thailand, a deeply Buddhist country. He was known as a humble leader who directed many social and economic development projects. His wife, Queen Sirikit, is also a beloved figure in the country. She has been in poor health for several years. Supporters believe King Bhumibol provided unity and stability at a time when Thailand faced many social and economic problems. The country experienced political unrest several times during his rule. The current leadership took power after the military ousted the civilian government in 2014. At times, King Bhumibol acted as a negotiator in disputes between competing military leaders. Sometimes he approved army requests to overthrow elected governments. The 70th anniversary of the king's rule was celebrated in Thailand in June, when millions of people wore yellow shirts to show their support. In a nationwide broadcast, Thai Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha called the death a tragedy for all of Thailand. He was a king that was loved and adored by all. The reign of the king has ended, and his kindness cannot be found anywhere else, he said. Next in line to Thailand's royal throne is the king's son, Crown Prince Maha Wachiralunkon. The Crown Prince, who returned home from Germany on Wednesday, has yet to gain the same respect in Thailand as his father. The Prime Minister confirmed on Thursday that the Crown Prince will become the new king. Prayut added that the government will observe 1 year of mourning for King Bhumibol. I'm Katie Weaver.
Member states of the United Nations have elected Portugal's former Prime Minister, António Guterres, the organization's next Secretary General. Assembly President Peter Thompson introduced the resolution. It was accepted by all 193 UN member states. With the approval, diplomats broke into applause. The UN Security Council nominated Guterres by acclamation last week after 6 unofficial votes. He was elected from among 13 candidates. 7 women and 6 men campaigned for the Secretary General position. His election disappointed many who had campaigned for the first woman or the first Eastern European to lead the UN. Guterres spoke to VOA during the campaign. He said he was seeking to lead the UN because he wanted to create the conditions for solutions to global challenges. Guterres served as Prime Minister of Portugal from 1995 to 2002. More recently, he led the UN Refugee Agency from 2005 until the end of 2015. UN members widely praised the nomination. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon of South Korea called Guterres a superb choice. Ban has led the UN since 2006. His term ends December 31st. Russia's UN ambassador, Vitaly Churkin, also praised Guterres. Churkin said, "He's a high-level politician. He's been prime minister of his country. He is a person who talks to everybody, listens to everybody, speaks his mind, very outgoing, I think open person." Guterres will be the 9th person to hold the Secretary General position in the organization's 71-year history. As chief of the UN, the Secretary General oversees about 44,000 employees and more than 100,000 peacekeepers. The position involves dealing with issues like human rights, refugees, and climate change, as well as fundraising for the UN's many campaigns. I'm Mario Ritter.
American singer and songwriter Bob Dylan won the Nobel Literature Prize on Thursday.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
The Swedish Academy said it chose Dylan for having created new poetic expressions within the great American song tradition. Some people were excited to see the news. Author Salman Rushdie called Dylan a great choice. U.S. President Barack Obama congratulated Dylan on Twitter. He described Dylan as one of his favorite poets. Others were not sure that a famous and successful musician needed to win a literature prize for his work. They thought the Academy should have picked a writer who would gain new readers because of the award. Dylan is the first American to win the prize since writer Toni Morrison won in 1993. Dylan was born in 1941 in the Midwestern U.S. state of Minnesota. His birth name was Robert Allen Zimmerman. He was raised in a Jewish middle-class family. Dylan taught himself to play the guitar, harmonica, and piano. He first started performing in the late 1950s in coffee shops in his home state. Dylan moved to New York City in 1959. He hoped to make it in the growing folk music scene in Greenwich Village. Folk musicians of that time mostly performed songs from America's past. However, Dylan began to write his own music. Some of Dylan's best-known works are from the 1960s. Many of his songs became connected to the anti-Vietnam War and civil rights movements, including his 1963 song, Blowin' in the Wind. Some of his other famous songs include Like a Rolling Stone from 1965, Knockin' on Heaven's Door from 1973, and Tangled Up in Blue from 1975.
Heading out for the old East Coast, Lord knows he's paid some dues getting through.
The music publication Rolling Stone released a list of the 100 greatest Bob Dylan songs in honor of his 75th birthday earlier this year. It considered Like a Rolling Stone Dylan's best song. Sara Danius is from the Swedish Academy. She announced the prize winner. She said, "Bob Dylan writes poetry for the ear, but it is perfectly fine to read his works as poetry." She also said people not familiar with Dylan's work should listen to his album, Blonde on Blonde. She said the album was an extraordinary example of his brilliant way of rhyming and his pictorial thinking. Rolling Stone rated Blonde on Blonde as the 9th best rock music album of all time. It includes songs like Stuck Inside of Mobile with the Memphis Blues Again.
Oh, mama. This could be the end. I'm stuck inside a mobile with the Memphis Blues again.
And Leopard Skin Pillbox Hat.
Yes, I see you got your brand new leopard skin pillbox hat.
The ceremony honoring all the Nobel Prize winners will take place December 10th in Stockholm. I'm Dan Friedel.
The World Health Organization, says that 92% of the world's population lives in areas of high air pollution. Experts say much of that pollution comes from vehicles fueled by diesel. Many cities in Europe have called for ending the production of diesel cars. They hope to replace them with electric vehicles as battery life for those vehicles improves. London is one of the most heavily polluted cities in Europe. Levels of harmful gases in the city are regularly higher than limits set by the European Union. Martin Williams, with King's College London, says pedestrians often do not realize how close they are to air pollution sources because they cannot see them.
One of the difficulties of getting the message across to the public at large in these days is the fact that air pollution, although it's a major public health problem, is actually invisible. Not like the smogs of the 1950s and 60s, when you not only could you see it, you could barely see anything else.
Williams adds that toxic gases from diesel cars have led to public health concerns. He says people across Great Britain have died too early because of the pollution.
The main problem that you're breathing in are the particulates, the soot from largely diesel exhaust, which is the primary problem as far as public health is concerned, and that's responsible for maybe up to around 30,000 premature deaths across the UK. The other pollutant that's more recently become an issue is nitrogen dioxide, again largely from diesel.
Last year, officials discovered that German carmaker Volkswagen attempted to cheat on emissions tests on its vehicles. The incident became known as Dieselgate. Ariba Hamid is with the environmental group Greenpeace. She says that incident is why many in the automobile industry want to produce electric cars.
It's quite clear that the car industry is feeling the pressure of a public health crisis owing to air pollution in big cities in particular, and the aftermath of the Dieselgate scandal, and which is the reason why it's looking to produce newer electric models.
At the Paris Motor Show in September, many of the vehicles on display were electric cars. Volkswagen announced it aims to sell 2 to 3 million electric vehicles each year by 2025. Experts say electric cars could offer the answer to air pollution in major cities. They add, however, that the electricity should be created using renewable energy.
Ever wonder why the United States votes on a Tuesday in November? It wasn't always that way. For the first 15 presidential elections, each state chose its own voting day until improved communication caused worries that early states would influence later voters. So Congress picked one day for everyone, the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. Why Tuesday? Roads were poor or non-existent. It could take a day to get to a polling place. Congress avoided forcing travel on Sunday, the Christian Sabbath. Monday was the day of travel for voters who needed it. Why November? Most Americans were farmers. In November, the harvest is over. The worst winter weather is still ahead. These days, the roads are good. Few Americans farm.
While some propose holding national elections on Saturday, the United States continues to vote on a Tuesday in November. From VOA Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. The rise and fall of Ziggy Stardust and the spiders from Mars is widely considered to be one of the best rock music albums of all time. The album helped make the British singer David Bowie world famous. The songs on Ziggy Stardust tell about a fictional rock star. The music is not only fun to listen to, it can help you better understand the workings of the English language, too. Consider the song Starman. Listen carefully to some of the words.
There's a star.
David Bowie is giving us information about how to use participial phrases. Today, we will explore, much like the larger-than-life personalities in Bowie's album, a really large space. This area is called movability, or the way English speakers are able to move words or expressions to different places in a sentence. However, to keep from going too far into outer space, we will study just one kind of movable modifier, the participial phrase.
In an earlier Everyday Grammar program, we talked about present participial phrases. These are groups of words that begin with the present participle, or ing, form of the verb. Such phrases often act like adjectives in a sentence. They describe or can influence the meaning of other words. Think back to David Bowie's song. The first words you heard were, "There is a starman waiting in the sky." In the song lyrics, the participial phrase "waiting in the sky" is acting like an adjective. It has an effect on the noun starman. In Bowie's song, the participial phrase comes at the end of the sentence. But some participial phrases can move to different places in a sentence, depending on how the sentence is structured. When participial phrases act as non-restrictive modifiers, they can move around in the sentence. A non-restrictive modifier does not define a noun. Instead, it only adds information or comments on the noun. You can read about these modifiers in another Everyday Grammar program. When these phrases move to different places, they can come at the beginning, middle, or end of a sentence.
One common adjectival participial phrase comes after the noun it is modifying, often in the middle of a sentence. Here is an example. My friends, walking at night, used headlamps. The noun phrase, my friends, is exact in meaning. The participial phrase, walking at night, acts like an adjective. It gives information about the subject, my friends. If you wanted to move the participial phrase to the beginning of the sentence, you could say, "Walking at night, my friends used headlamps." Or, if you wanted to move the participial phrase to the end of the sentence, you could say, "My friends used headlamps, walking at night." All of these sentences have the same basic meaning.
But there is an important difference between all of these sentences, the way they sound. When reading aloud, the pitch of your voice goes up and down at different places in each sentence. These changes, along with brief stoppages in the sentence, help direct attention to certain words and phrases. When you change the usual position of a participial phrase after an important noun, you are drawing more attention to its placement. Understanding this idea will not only help you understand the music of grammar, the up and down sounds of a voice while speaking English, it will also help you understand how to place emphasis on different ideas. Many great musicians, poets, and speechwriters use movable phrases when they are writing or speaking, even if they do not consciously think about it. They want to make sure an important word or idea comes at certain parts of a sentence. They also want to offer a mix in the sentence structures they use. Moving adjectives, such as participial phrases, to different places in a sentence is one way to meet this objective.
So, how does this principle work? In general, the most important information comes at the end of a sentence, says Martha Kolln, a grammar expert. Important information can come at the beginning of a sentence, too. So, when the participial phrase ends the sentence, "My friends used headlamps, walking at night," the participial phrase receives great emphasis. When you write or speak this sentence, you are suggesting that walking at night is important information. When you put the participial phrase at the beginning of the sentence, "Walking at night, my friends used headlamps," it gets some emphasis. You draw the listener or reader's attention to the information in the participial phrase by its placement, away from the noun it is modifying. The participial phrase gets the least amount of emphasis when it is in the middle of the sentence. For example, "My friends, walking at night, used headlamps." These different grammatical structures are used differently depending on the situation. So, while you might hear some structures at a poetry or book reading, you might not hear them when Americans are talking with one another.
The important points in this discussion are the following. Participial phrases often act as adjectives, sometimes move to different places in a sentence, and always modify the subject when they are set off by commas. When you understand these principles, you will be able to write and speak more elegant sentences in English. Naturally, there are other ways to change the meaning of a sentence. We will explore this in another Everyday Grammar program. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.